The Babylon Podcast was our last best hope for B5 fans. A self-contained show, 1 hour long, located on an RSS feed. A place for interviews and episode discussions for a whole bunch of humans and aliens. A shining beacon in cyberspace, all alone on the web. It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, the year the Lost Tales came upon us all. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2007. The name of the show is The Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to The Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
Hey, it's Jeffrey Willis in Hollywood, California, where Paris Hilton is not the only one not wearing underwear.
Thank you for sharing.
Yes. We'll be right back after these important messages.
Now, that just means he's safely ensconced at home in his favorite, I hope, non-leather chair.
Going to the window under the shower curtain.
I didn't say it was me. I just said she wasn't alone in her freedom.
All righty then.
And freedom's just another word for nothing left to wear.
Very good.
Nice.
That was quick.
Nice,
that was good.
That was very good.
I like that. So guess what, kids? I totally let us all down tonight. I have no special guests coming on board.
Oh, Jeffrey.
I think they're mic shy is what it is. And I mean meninge. I'm not talking about microphone. I think they're a little, he's got a certain prowess about him that...
Well, there's a lot of love to be given here.
Don't scare them off. We're trying to bring... Let them know that we're very friendly. Let them... No, I'm not going to say
that.
You know what? No. There's no way to salvage that.
No.
Hey, there's a little bit of news that I would like to pass on
before
we go on. And I'm kind of working from memory here. The JMS news group, there was some activity on that in the last week or so. And the long and the short of it is apparently JMS himself has turned in a rough draft or a first look at a script for the Silver Surfer movie.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the question was that got tossed out there is with the Ron Howard film Changeling that he's working on and another project with Clint Eastwood and Angelina Jolie and now the Silver Surfer movie, what does that mean for the next round of Babylon 5, The Lost Tales? And the response was basically, beats me.
Oh. Now, I thought Changeling was involving Clint Eastwood and Ron Howard together.
I got the impression it was a whole other project.
Oh.
But I could be wrong. I defer to your...
I could be wrong, too. I just thought I saw something with Clint Eastwood's name in it regarding Changeling. I could have just mixed those pages up because I was reading fast. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fine.
But still,
there's that news out there. So our great maker has been a very, very busy person, which is a good thing. But
and
I
have you seen the Fantastic Four movie yet?
I have not.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Just say if they go ahead with whatever script he comes up with for the Silver Surfer, I will be in line to see that too.
Wow.
Yes.
Let me ask one question about that before we have to get back to Babylon 5. Do we get to see Galactus?
You see an artist's interpretation of Galactus, and that's all I'm going to say. It's nothing like the Galactus in the comic book at all.
Oh, man, you're kidding.
No.
That's where they did stray from canon there, but they did a really good job with Silver Surfer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They did a magnificent job with Silver Surfer. They did a believable scenario in bringing Doom back from his apparent death in the first movie. And I will leave it at that because anything else would be getting in spoiler territory, and I've been told not to do that if I can avoid it.
And I think we're starting to sound like an episode of Slice of Sci-Fi. So
we'll save that for Slice next week or later this week, depending on where your time shifting tables are. And I think it's time for us to get into geeking, because we have a lot of it.
Oh, and it's a doozy of an episode to geek on, that's for sure.
The season two finale, Fall of Night, where much happens and leaves many people breathless in anticipation of more.
Are you a procrastinator? Have you been thinking, well, I've heard good things about the audiobook series Heaven and Hell, but I've got other stuff to listen to? Well, hey, don't take my word for it. I just write the dang thing. But Cory Doctorow, one of the editors of the Boing Boing blog and science fiction author, says, Mer Lafferty is a funny writer with a clear obsession for afterlife mythos and an admirable hand at drawing likable characters. And Scott Sigler, the author of Ancestor, Earthcore, and The Rookie, found at scottsigler.net, says, Heaven is a sexy, sophisticated, and supernatural romp through pantheon after pantheon, kind of like a kegger for the gods. And J.C. Hutchins, author of the Seventh Son trilogy, found at jchutchins.net, says, There was once a time when I resisted listening to Mer Lafferty's work, mostly because I danced to my own beat. I'm contrary. I don't like to follow the crowd. And the crowd had been singing Mer's praises since 2004. But when I finally listened to Heaven, it all became clear. The story is a brilliant mashup of mythology, religion, and endless creativity and possibilities. Mer Lafferty isn't as good as the crowd says she is. She's better. So you might think I'm telling you all of this just because I want to crow about all these fantastic writers saying cool things about me. But honestly, the deal is that Season 3 of Heaven is dropping June 23rd at podiobooks.com. And if you haven't listened to Heaven or Hell yet, they're still available at podiobooks.com. They're all three ready for you. Now what are you waiting for?
Digging down to the obscurest facts in fandom, this is Deep Geeking.
Wow, we finally made it. We are deep geeking on the final episode of Season 2.
The Fall of Night. And you want to talk about a jam-packed episode.
Yes.
I have to say, leading off of our conversation from Comes the Inquisitor, I remember at the time that that episode aired that there was a certain consternation in the online group that I was emailing back and forth with, that JMS had revealed too much in Comes the Inquisitor, that having done, you know, basically said, okay, these are the right people for the war that's coming up, that was kind of given away too much.
Hmm.
And what else was what does that leave JMS? Well, then we get The Fall of Night, in which he does show us even more, but you know what? It only leaves us with more questions. And I recall after seeing The Fall of Night the first time, sitting there with my jaw hanging open, wondering, what was he going to do for the next 3 years after dropping that one on us?
Yeah. I remember watching that, wondering how you could go, because back then it was like, you know, okay, how does he top that episode? How does he top that episode? How does he top this episode? And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa. And then, whoa. There's like four whoas in that episode. And then you're like, oh, that was great. What do you mean I got to wait till next season?
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And the first two or three woes pretty much build one on the other. Mm-hmm. And then it's that last one where he pulls the rug completely out from underneath you, and the episode becomes something entirely different.
Yeah, that's the one you didn't see coming.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, one of the things that I noted watching this episode again, whether or not this is one of the, well, maybe it is one of the main themes of the episode, and certainly to a certain extent of the series, but it's the slippery, fluid nature of language. In this sense, when the episode opens, of course, we've got Sheridan flying with the Zeta Squadron, practicing maneuvers, especially training for things that they might run up against the Centauri.
Right.
Sheridan gets called back to the barn, and he finds the Brakiri and Pakmarat ambassador basically having called on him for an emergency. And when he sits down to talk with them, they reveal to Sheridan that the Centauri are starting to move on their territories. As the Brakiri ambassador notes, Drazi ambassador notes that the Centauri have captured one of their listening posts and claim that they are liberating it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Sheridan calls Londo into his chambers, and Londo comes in, and of course the first thing Sheridan says is, "What the hell are you doing?" Completely snapping Londo around. It's like, you know, don't talk to me that way. You know, I came here on good faith, and Sheridan says, "Okay, look, Londo, you know, here's what's going on. This is what we know." And Londo at that point, you know, Sheridan says, you know, you're not content with just bombing the Narn back to the Stone Age. You want to take over more stuff. And Londo says, no, we're establishing a buffer zone. Right. So,
right.
You know, we're all talking about this, you know, we're using the same language, but we're talking about different things. Or are we? Are we basically talking about the same thing but using different words to give it different meanings? And this goes on throughout the entire episode. Mm. When Lance shows up with Mr. Wells, Lance comes on board the station and he says, you know what, we are investigating the Centauri situation. And Sheridan and Ivanov are great.
This is wonderful.
It's finally coming around, trying to see what's going on. And Lance says, yes, you know, we've been making our own investigations. We're coming to a decision, but we need to see things for ourselves firsthand.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it's only after the Narn cruiser comes looking for sanctuary, and Sheridan is promising, you know, we'll do whatever you need. We'll give you protection. I'll give you my word. Lance shows up saying, Captain, what are you doing? Sheridan says, well, we're giving them sanctuary. You know, they can't stand out by their own. Their energy is depleted. They've got, you know, sick and wounded. And Lance says, you're ruining everything. This has put my entire mission in danger. To negotiate a treaty between Earth and the Centauri.
At which point everyone goes, what?
What? Right, exactly. So they were all talking about the same thing, the Centauri situation.
Just from different angles.
Exactly.
And it's an angle you don't see. You have no idea that this is what Lance is working towards until you see that he really doesn't want to talk to Jakar at all.
Oh, that scene
the
is great.
The avoidance, complete
right.
avoidance.
When Jakar comes along, Lance just is like, oh, you know, well, why can I help you? He doesn't realize who Jakar is.
Mm-hmm.
And Ivanov says, oh, this is, well, Jakar, he was the ambassador. And at that point, Lance gets this stricken look on his face, like, uh-oh. And he says, okay, well, no, you know what, I don't have any time. Got to go. See you later. Bye. And, you know, there's the great nonverbal exchange between Ivanova and Jakar.
Uh-huh.
You know, Ivanova just shrugs like, oh, man, I don't know. I don't get it. And, of course, that subsequent to that, we find out that Lance is really there to negotiate with the Centauri.
Mm-hmm.
I really... the other part of the, I mean, there's so much in this episode. The other aspects of language that come into play. We have the scene with Mr. Wells paying a visit to Commander Ivanov in her quarters. Of course, Wells is the representative of the Night Watch.
Right.
And he comes and he says, "You know what? We've examined your record. I'd like to know who I'm working with. And your record is exemplary, Commander. You've risen through the ranks on your own. You've done it with loyalty and honesty. And, you know, what have you thought about doing for your future?" And, you know, Ivanova just says, well, maybe take over the station if the captain decides to move on. You know, I'd really love to command my own starship. And Wells says, well, you know what, I have no doubt that you'll get that. But you know what? we're well placed in EarthGov that we could probably make that happen sooner for you. And of course, Ivanova, you know, hears that and she's instantly on guard.
Yes.
And she goes, okay. And I mean, her next line is, in exchange for what?
Yes.
You know, no, oh, that would be sweet. Oh, that's nice. So, you know, thanks for looking out for me. She just knows instantly.
Yes,
you know,
literally.
Shields are up.
Something's up. I don't trust you. What do you want?
Right. Oh, but you know, a person like you is in a place where you receive certain information, you know the comings and goings of ships and just things that might be important to know for the security of Earth and the Night Watch. And you know, I mean, it all sounds very innocuous.
Uh-huh.
And
it's really funny.
Ivanova, of course. Sorry, go ahead.
I said, no, it's really funny because he sat there and he praised her for her loyalty. And then he's asking her to betray those loyalties in order to get ahead.
Right.
Was he just that arrogant to think that she would just switch so soon? Or did he think he could sweet talk her?
I would think, you know, now that you mention it, I didn't really think about it, but my guess is it is as much scoping out potential enemies.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, he's there on a fact-finding mission for the Night Watch. You know, it would have been nice to sweet-talk her and gotten her on his side, but she makes it very plain as to where her feelings lie.
Mm-hmm.
And he never misses a beat. He's like, well, the offer will be open for as long as it needs to be open,
mm-hmm.
you know? And he's just, he's made a mark in his little Night Watch book. Commander Ivanova, not one of us.
Hmm.
And it continues, the meeting of the Night Watch, where Wells is talking and he's saying, I see we've got some new members. This is good. The reports are good. But you, Mr. Allen,
mm-hmm.
you haven't been turning in any reports. And Zach's like, huh? What? and again, we start dealing with the slippery nature of language.
Yeah.
Wells says, well, certainly your compatriots have been turning in reports. So you haven't noticed anything? And Wells says, well, we've got a name of a shopkeeper. Rattles off the name. Been saying some negative things about the president. Well, you know, yeah, I heard that. It's like, well, why don't you file a report on that? Well, I never thought of it in those terms.
Mm-hmm.
Wells lists off a half dozen examples of things that could be, and he uses the word seditious.
Yes.
Sedition comes in little packages as well as big ones. Well, I never thought of it like that. I'm not too comfortable mm-hmm. with this, Zach
yeah.
says, but what
and
else are you going to do?
Yeah, the whole insinuation that, well, you just file the reports and let us deal with what the real meanings are. Your job is just a report. We'll handle everything else. And that's when you realize that Zach may have realized that he jumped into a fire when he thought he was jumping into a frying pan.
Yeah, well, not even that. He just figured he was going to take, you know, what, 50 credits for walking around doing what I do anyways?
Yeah, this is true.
Wait a minute. And Wells, I mean, Wells has that oily smile, the, you know, the snake oil salesman.
Mm-hmm.
He says, so have you heard the shopkeeper say these things? Oh, don't worry about it. We already know his name. We already have a report. You're just simply confirming what
yes.
we already know. And Zach says, well, yeah, I guess I did hear that. And Wells just looks up, see how easy that was? And then you're on the slippery slope.
You're on your way speeding down the slippery slope.
Right. And Zach the whole time is just sitting there, you know, drumming his fingers. And he's got this real nervous look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was another great little shot in there when, you know, they first bring up the bit with the shopkeeper. Zach looks around, looking for the person who might have reported this, and a couple
yeah.
heads just kind of don't make eye contact with him.
It's like he's offended that somebody would even bother, because he knows
right.
the guy, you know, to him is he's just blowing off steam. No
right.
harm, no foul, really.
Yeah.
And then it's not till later when we
yeah.
see him being dragged away in chains that Zach is stricken. You see, he's really torn.
Right. And of course, the Night Watch starts feeding information to Wells about the Narn cruiser, about the exercises that the Star Fury squadrons have been engaged in.
Yes.
Sheridan is aghast. And at the point in time when Londo finally calls up and says, "Captain, I know that there's a Narn, you're harboring a Narn cruiser," Sheridan puts all the pieces to place, and he says, "Okay, well, if Londo knows, and he's calling about it now, it means there's already a cruiser on the way."
Yeah.
Which means if Londo knows, that means he got it from somewhere, which means probably Wells, and as Ivanova says, they've got, you know, spooks all over the place. So, and then we find ourselves in a shooting war.
Ah, yes.
Even having seen this episode dozens of times, it's still, you know,
hair-raising.
Pounding.
Yeah, it's hair-raising because you realize, says, "Don't you dare fire on this station." I'm like, "No, we will." "Oh, you're in trouble now."
Right. "Well, they're targeting the Centauri vessel. They're targeting Zeta Squadron. They're targeting us." Okay. And what makes it so pulse pounding, I mean, the pace of it and the music and the acting,
mm-hmm.
but what drives it is that the decisions and the actions of the characters across the last year and a half of the show, the consequences and the ramifications are playing out. And, you know, it's not like riding to the rescue in the last 10 seconds, cutting the red wire to defuse the bomb. No, this isn't. I've made a decision. You've made a decision. Something's got to give.
It's an escalation of tensions where cooler heads cannot prevail just
right.
because of the buildup of everything that's gone on the past half season.
And there's a great scene at the beginning when Sheridan is talking with Londo, and you know, Sheridan at first is antagonistic, and Londo, of course, you know, is completely unprepared for this, but in one last attempt to reach out, Sheridan softens a bit and he says to Londo, "Look, everything's falling apart, and the Centauri are right in the center of it. You know, your people have to see that. You have to see that." And there's that moment where Londo just can't meet him in the eye, and he just kind of, you know what, I don't have to listen to this. and that's the one moment in this episode, anyways, when things might have turned out differently. But alas, 'tis not to be.
Yeah. And I have to wonder how much of it is because Earth wanted to make a non-aggression treaty with the Centauri instead of taking a stand and saying, "Hey, cool it."
Right. Well, it's that, it's, you know, back to the World War II homage, I guess that's not really the right word, but using it as the source, it's the idea, you know, we hear throughout the series to this point that Earth is tired of war. The Earth-Minbari War really took it out of Earth, and even with the Home Guard, you know, making noise, nobody really wants a fight. Who's the biggest block? Who's the biggest bully on the block right now? What's the Centauri?
Yeah.
Do you really want to go up against them?
True, but I saw it. I didn't see it as the World War II "we're tired of fighting" metaphor. Not until he actually said, "You know, we will in our time. You know, we will finally know peace in our time."
Right.
Up until that point, I saw it as a continuing of, you know, the anti-alien sentiment that was growing on Earth. It's like, this fight is between them. Let them fight. Who cares?
Well, yeah, and see, I think that's what was intriguing, excuse me, or rather the question mark hanging in the air about Lance's mission to mm-hmm. Babylon 5.
Yes.
Knowing that anti-aliens situation, but knowing that the Centauri are becoming that active, which way was it going to fall? But see, even if it was strictly, you know, an anti-alien sort of thing, you would think that Earth wouldn't make a pact at all. If anything, you know, you'd want to say, all right, you know, all aliens off Babylon 5, it's Earth Force, you know, it's Earth Alliance facility run by the Earth Alliance. Sorry, everybody go.
That would have been interesting.
That sure would have been, wouldn't it?
That would have been very interesting.
Yeah, but no, we get, you know, instead we get the quote-unquote non-aggression pact between Earth and the Centauri Republic. And that, of course, then leads to one of the all-time favorite scenes of Babylon 5 fans. You have to give an apology, Captain.
It's the thought that counts.
The scene is leading up to that is great, where you know, he's talking with Lance, and Lance says, "I, you know, Captain, you have no idea what you've done." And Sheridan says, "Yeah, I do. You know, if I hadn't fired on that, you and I wouldn't be here to have this conversation now." And then even drops regulations on him and says, "Well, you know, look, I was responding to regulation, General Order 47. All Earth Force personnel are required to render aid to anyone who pulls out a distress call." Then Orange did. I answered it, so I'm legally and morally in the right. Sorry that it was politically inconvenient. And Lance, you know, he knows that is true.
Mm-hmm.
But Wells, being the snake oil salesman that he is, says, "Well, yes, you're right, Captain. But here's the thing. The Joint Chief backed you up on the decision that you made, but it's the decisions leading up to your actions that have caused a great deal of consternation. So you have a choice. Either make an apology or, you know, refuse this order to make the apology, and basically your career's over. What's it going to be?"
And, yes.
You know, Sheridan says, "I assume this apology has already been written." "Oh, no need." "No, you'll do the right thing. After all, it's the thought that counts."
That scene right there, "I assume this apology has already been written for me."
Yes.
I cracked up laughing because he realized his hands were tied and he says, "Well, do I get to rehearse what you want me to say before I go out there and say it, or are you just going to let me wing it?"
Right. Yeah. And that speaks to the, as much an idealist as Sheridan is, he's also very pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
He knows when he's been maneuvered into a place, and he has no illusions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's really funny, too, because you have him, he's boxed into a corner, and they're still going to say, "No, we want you to say it in your words." And that actually has an echo in something that they wanted him to do in season 4 when he was taken captive. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes.
Anyway, coming back.
Right.
So
then, of course, we get his little rehearsal in the mirror. "I'm sorry, your people were stupid enough to fire on a station full of a 250,000 humans, including your own people. And I'm sorry I waited as long as I did before I sent them all straight to hell." Oh, fantastic.
And then the little grin he gets, was, "Well, it's the thought that counts."
Yes. Yeah.
And then Fate steps in and takes away the need for him to say that apology and possibly compromise his authority.
One thing that I want to bring up before we delve into that amazing revelation, at the scene in the Zen Garden, number one, the first thing is there's the meeting of all the ambassadors that have been called, because it's going to be very public.
Right.
That's one of the things. They're not only out for Sheridan to give an apology, they wanted to publicly humiliate him.
Right.
By doing this. Well, there's all the ambassadors sitting around talking, knots of two or three or four, except for Londo. Nobody is talking to Londo. He's just off on his own, and he looks like that person. You know, we've all been that person. We've all been at places where that person has been there, just the one person that nobody would, you know, everybody wishes that they were somewhere else. And Londo is that person. And there's Jakar, and I love it. He's trying to be sneaky, but you can't really be sneaky poking out around the bushes like Artie Johnson and Laughing. I mean, that's you know. But
he's a little large and lizard-like to be hiding behind that flimsy little bush.
Yeah, right. ignore that former Narn ambassador behind the tree, please. but what is interesting is that, again, we take another step in the evolution of his character. Sheridan has put himself on the line. And actually, even go before that, Sheridan has done everything he's been able to do within his power at any given point to help the Narn, up to the point where his career is in jeopardy. And Jakar realizes this, and he wants so badly to help. Pathetic isn't the right word, but, you know, Ivanova says, you shouldn't even be here, and Jakar is like, but I want to help, and I know there's some people here in the non-aligned worlds who will listen. Let me do something to help someone who has done everything he can to help me. And then, of course, everything changes.
Mm-hmm.
Sheridan on the core shuttle boards it, couple of Centauri, a couple other aliens, and they go through a couple stops, everybody gets off, there's Sheridan, and he looks over and notices a Centauri explosive device glued to a seat. You know, again, Babylon 5, breaking with convention, Sheridan doesn't even bother trying to figure out which wire to cut to stop the bomb.
Yeah, he's like, I'm out of here.
Right, exactly. And
those command level override commands come in handy.
Yes, they do. That's why people like him have commands like that. Yes. and then again, the scientific accuracy that Babylon 5 as a show has tried to maintain. He's basically at the zero gravity zone of the station.
Yeah.
You know, it's his own inertia that he imparted on himself by leaping out of the tram that has him in motion. But, you know, he's got a little bit of time, but even at that rate, he's going to be smeared all over the inside of the station if they can't get to him.
Right.
And that's when Delenn looks over at Kosh and says, you know what's at stake here. If you're going to do something, you do it now.
And does it? He does. Do it, he does.
Yes. Shallan, Dwashala, Valeria.
Everyone sees somebody. I really, really wish I knew what Londo saw, because he said he didn't see anything.
I don't think he saw anything.
So does that mean he just saw Sheridan float safely to the ground?
Right.
Because
think about his expression. The quick shots are successions of people looking up in awe and reverence and amazement. And Lotto's got this look like, what is everybody looking up there for? There's this puzzlement. There's this kind of like, you know, I'm looking where they're all looking, but I don't see anything.
So does that mean that Vorlons didn't tinker with the Centauri, did he see a ball of light or absolutely nothing? That has always been a question for me. I mean, I could understand if he saw something, but it wasn't identifiable as one of his gods, as one of the Centauri prophets or gods or something. But to see absolutely nothing?
Yeah, because I would think that in the same way that Kosh is projecting himself into the perceptions of all those people, I don't think it's unreasonable to assume that he can also choose not to manifest to certain people if he so chooses.
Are the Centauri a godless society?
No. No. Oh, they got 61 gods.
Yeah. They have many, many gods. And they have...
How many gods do we have now? Well, there's 60. Well, there might be 61 if you count so-and-so, but I don't really... Yeah, okay, all right.
Yes. They have many, many gods, and they have telepaths, so they've been tinkered with along the way. So that means he had to consciously project himself as a different deity to different races and consciously project himself as nothing to the Centauri who were present. Interesting.
Well, to the only Centauri who was present.
People outside the Zen Garden could see him if they looked up at the time. Now, whether or not they didn't know to look up until after the explosion, we don't know.
I don't know either. I think though the point being that particular individual, Londo Mollari, truly saw nothing, because one of the things that I love about that, I love everything about this episode, but at the end when they're in the Zocalo and the Narn and the Drazi are talking, it was Shallan, no. It was so-and-so, Darshala, who brings light to the world. And rather than getting into a fight about it, they just say, you know what, it doesn't matter. What matters is this place is blessed.
Yeah.
And they just, I mean, they're filled with this rapture. And Londo doesn't feel it, and he knows that he has that. I mean, he knows. He knows that he can't have that. That's not for him. And as much as anything else with the choices that he's made on his path, that is as painful as anything else, to realize that you are not favored of the gods.
I'm actually jumping in on this one here.
Go ahead.
Is JMS saying then that Londo is a person who lacks faith? And maybe that is what sets him up for the course in season 3. Because only a person that lacks faith would be able to make the alliances and do to the Narns what he sets himself up to do.
Yeah, you know, Mike, that's a good observation, and I think if you use understand faith as not specific adherence to a deity or religion, but faith that says that if I make right choices, the universe will take care of itself and all will be well.
Well, yes, we've said throughout this that JMS is a very spiritual person, and it shows, it reflects in the writings that he does inside of the show. And maybe this is his way of saying those with lacking faith are bound to create heinous errors or heinous mistakes against humanity, mankind, other civilizations, others.
Right. Then that's not what he's saying then, because we see Londo actively trying to avoid the fate he has seen in his dreams.
Ah, but let's remember what Lanier said in Comes the Inquisitor. If you do the right things but for the wrong reasons, the
right
work is tainted.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there might be a little bit more to this than just...
And think about Londo's entire path through the series, even down to the end when he's emperor and he has the Drak Keeper. Why does he take that on? Because he still feels like he's trying to do the best he can for the Centauri Republic.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's all motivated for the Republic. It's all for Centauri.
Right, but he has already made bad decisions. So no matter what he's doing to try to rectify it, the fact is, at the very beginning, he was doing it for the wrong reasons.
Well, see, I've always said that about Lem.
At the beginning, he's making it for the wrong reasons, but are we also saying now that because you've made mistakes, you can never find redemption?
Well, see, that's the thing.
Because
that's
what
always,
you're saying he's doing up until the very end, up until Jakar and he meet later.
Londo has always seemed to me as a person that lacks a moral compass. And in this right here, there's more evidence to that fact.
No, I don't see that. He does not lack a moral compass. He is blinded by the past, and he thinks that he will get greater glory by serving his people instead of doing what he thinks is best for him and allowing him to serve his people better that way. There's a difference.
But having said that, to get back to Mike's point, he does not have the faith to let go of the past and recognize that even though it's a new era and the Centauri Republic may not be the Lion of the Galaxy, things just might actually work out okay and we'll be fine. Let's work with what's here, what's in front of us, and make a new Centauri Republic. And that's what Turhan was trying to do. He was the one who was saying there's been far too much bloodshed. There's been far too much pain, far too much death and destruction, and even though we are the people in power to a certain extent, it's time for us to say we're sorry.
Okay, then
and
we're
he doesn't
talking.
Get that, he doesn't get that chance. And part of the reason he doesn't get that chance is because Londo has wittingly or unwittingly align themselves with people like Reefa, who definitely do not have moral compasses.
Yes. Now, see, I don't see that as a lack of faith. Not the way Mike is describing it.
Hmm.
I don't see it as a lack of faith, because he believes. He just believes in something that he believes that if he lets go of the past, he doesn't have a future. So he believes. He has faith in the old ways. It's not that he doesn't have faith at all.
And now we are back to where I started the whole conversation with the slippery nature of language.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love conversations like this.
Look at it this
and
way.
We even get, and see, he even we get to the bit where at the end, when Delenn comes to visit Sheridan, and she says, "Oh, I'm here to see how you're doing." And Sheridan says, "That really was Kosh, even though everybody saw something different." And Delenn kind of rapturously says, "Yes, the Vorlons over the eras have guided the younger races, directed them," and Sheridan goes, "Manipulated them?"
Yes.
You know, worked things so that when the time was right, we'd see what they need us to see in order to get the proper response. And Delenn says, "Well, you know, as you say, it's a matter of perspective." So all the way through the episode, it's all about perception and, you know, what are you saying versus what the other guy is saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. what a rich episode. What a way to end a season.
What a torturous way to end a season, because you had to wait so long
continue. But it's not a cliffhanger. That was one of the other things that was really amazing. It wasn't like Sheridan had jumped out of the tram and we get the "to be continued."
Yes, yes. It was
we get a resolution, but only on smaller things. It leaves you with a much, rather than that kind of, "Oh, what will happen next?" It's that dread of the unknowable future.
What happened? What happened was several medium-sized boxes closed, and about 40 other ones opened. That's just not fair. It's delicious storytelling, but it's like the shows we love the most. The waiting, the anticipation, the reason it's so hair-raising and so annoying is because you want to know more, you want to see what happens next, and you want to see it now instead of waiting until September.
Right. Yes. It's
great
and,
fun.
And the fact was, you know, you knew even with Ivanova's voiceover at the end, you know, we come to this place as, you know, a chance to make peace, and at the end of the year we knew it had failed. I mean, you talk about completely upending the whole concept of the series. I mean, it's sold up to that point as, "Oh, United Nations in space, la, 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 we're all going to get together, try to solve our differences." Nope, it didn't work out this time. Sorry, guys. What does that leave you with? It's a whole different story at that point. And just, it's ballsy to make that kind of thing. Can you imagine, like Star Trek completely upending its entire format?
Nope. And that's why we love Babylon 5 more. Oops,
exactly.
We're going to get voicemails for that one, aren't we?
Oh, we are.
Well, we have a lot of voicemails to get to, so that will wrap up our deep geeking, and we'll be back right after this.
I'm Brad.
I'm Glenn.
And I'm Christina.
And we're from the Pod Culture Podcast and podculture.net.
When you're done here and you find yourself hungry for some more geeky goodness, head on over and check us out.
From A-plus shows to grade Z movies and everything else in between, like comics and video games.
Along with the occasional special musical guest, there's something for the geek in us all.
So let your geek flag fly and head on out to our little corner of the verse.
www.podculture.net.
Pod Culture. Equal opportunity geekness.
Be seeing you.
And we are back with our listener feedback section. And What?
It's becoming more than just feedback, I think.
Listener interaction? Listener participation?
Listener domination, I think.
There you go. Yeah. Listener invasion. Yeah.
That's it.
I like that. Listener invasion. Okay, start us
off. Well, look, I want to start off. I have here the greatest email we have ever received at the Babylon Podcast.
Now, you realize you have to be careful with that, because Yarstow or Edmund will try to top it later.
No. This okay, you ready? Mm-hmm. Here we go. Dear Tim, I've been meaning to write this for a while, and after listening to last week's live feed recording, I knew I needed to finally take the time. Oh, this comes from Valerie Smith, by the way, New York.
Okay.
So I listened to last week's live feed, knew I needed to finally take the time to write. You are awesome. When the show first started, I felt like I identified more with Summer, and you were just the guy who didn't like anything. It was season one. I eventually gave you a break. Within a pretty short period of time, you edged out Summer as my favorite. Every time someone cuts you off or makes fun of you, I shake my fist at the sky. They just don't appreciate you like they should. I was thrilled that even on your recent week off, you sent in a segment that they played and couldn't interrupt you. It was pure bliss, even if I did agree more with Edmund's response. In any case, I just wanted to write and let you know that you've got fans who appreciate your quirky sense of humor and your general geekiness. I even squee a little time every time you quote Python. Please keep up the good work. Thank you for your weekly dose of Babylonian goodness. And if the others give you any attitude, you can tell them to suck it.
Oh, the greatest
email ever sent to the Babylon Podcast. Thank you, Val. I really do appreciate
it. Tim, that money comes out of your part of the check.
That's fine.
Tim, hey, got a girlfriend.
Yeah, the question is, who's going to become the stalker?
Valerie, I would like to request now that you use your obvious influence over Tim to get him to move to Phoenix. Just saying.
Okay. I think we're going to have to get Tim a new set of headphones, too, because his ego has now expanded his skull to a size that is absolutely going to, all kinds of...
It's been hard to get through doorways all week, I can tell you that.
I can imagine.
Okay, well, this first voicemail, this is for you, Jeff.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Welcome to Cooking with Kosh. In this episode, Tajan of the Narn regime helps our favorite Vorlon chef create a traditional Narn dish, Breen.
So, Ambassador, did you know that every species in the known universe has their own recipe for Breen? The Earthers call theirs Swedish meatballs.
No.
In fact, I think our dish is just about ready. Why don't we take it out and share with the audience?
We are not prepared yet.
This is my recipe, and I'll say when it's ready.
It is not yet time.
I'm telling you, it's going to burn.
Impudent.
Suck my pouch.
Incorrect.
Join us next time when Kosh makes a bowl of Bagna Caldo with Security Chief Michael Garibaldi and learn how he really lost that hair.
That is brilliant.
Oh, my goodness.
Man, oh, man, the quality of voicemails are really going through the roof.
Oh, that was brilliant.
This isn't voicemail. These are segments.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we got for most of it.
Oh, my goodness. That was beautiful. That was wonderful.
You guys are losing your show.
Hey, if they you know what it's going to be? It's going to be, hi, I'm Summer Brooks. Hi, I'm Tim Callender. Hey, it's Jeffrey Woolworth. And then we just press the play button.
You know what? If it keeps it that quality or better, I can live with that.
I'm good with that. No, and you know what? The truth is, this has been, going back to the old days of the station.com, I mean, it was all about trying to create the greatest level of interactivity between the show and the fans. And this, what we're getting now, this is exactly you know, the pinnacle of that interaction, to have this much dialogue going on amongst fans and everybody playing along.
Yeah.
Wow. It really is a good thing. It's not a bad thing at all.
Absolutely.
And I'm Val's favorite.
I think you and Val are going to get your own damn show is what that's
saying. Yeah.
Gold Channel Online. Message received from Operative Number 6, Ministry of Information.
Hi guys, it's Edmund from Greenville with some comments on Comes the Inquisitor. You talked about how Sebastian's visitation offers the first signs that the Vorlons might not be so benign and beneficent. I've always taken the similarity of Sebastian's repetition of "Who are you?" to Morden's "What do you want?" as one of those signs. The fact that Sebastian uses it almost as a cudgel compared to Morden's slicker, more insinuating approach also hints at future revelations about the two races' true natures. But this time round, another comparison sprang to mind. In the midst of Sebastian's initial bullying interrogation comes this passage.
Nothing to stand on that is not provided, defined, delineated, stamped, sanctioned, numbered, and approved by others.
Which immediately brought to mind a very similar phrase from another show.
I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered.
That, of course, was number 6, from Arrival, the opening episode of The Prisoner. A borrowing, an homage, another cosmic coincidence? I leave that for you to decide. Be seeing you.
I would like to think that that was inspiration from a truly, truly just divine source.
Well, I think it speaks to the common nature of the human condition.
I think it's plagiarism.
Those are universal.
That's another word for it.
From the guy who's fighting a duck.
Very good. What else you got?
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hello, Babylon Podcast. This is Logan from New Jersey. I just wanted to make a conjecture related to show number 67, Divided Loyalties. While deeply geeking, Edmund noted that when Lita first contacts Delenn, we see three reflections of Lita's image from the Babcom in the teardrop mirrors behind Delenn. Summer then says how the middle mirror is perfectly framed, and that knowing JMS, it can't be just simply a pretty shot. I would agree that it is most definitely intentional and offers this speculation. Throughout Lita's arc, we see her evolve as a character that Sheridan and everyone can trust and rely on in times of dire circumstances and overwhelming odds. Again and again, she helps them out of dangerous situations and becomes someone they can all rely on, and even on a number of occasions, be the one who saves their lives. I would say that core part of Lita is that reflection in the center mirror. As for the other two reflections, there were times in the series when Lita's eyes would turn either shadow black or Vorlon white. The other two reflections in the mirrors could correlate right back to the personalities that arise when she's under either influence. The particular episode escapes me, but I seem to recall a moment on a White Star where Lita's overcome with eyes shadow black and scares Ivanova or someone before she regains control of herself. That certainly seems to me like a sign of another personality or two under the surface of Lita's everyday personality. Anyway, I love listening to the show and look forward to continuing to comment in on upcoming episodes. On a quick note with the jerseys, perhaps there could be a checkbox on the order form to specify that you would like your color randomly selected, at least for those of us desiring that extra little step of authenticity. Later.
That could be interesting. Like, I would like my color randomly selected, please.
Yeah.
And the episode escapes me, but it's the first episode where they fought a shadow vessel. And the person who was scared at seeing Lita's eyes black was Sheridan, actually. Or startled, I believe.
Yeah. They were out hunting. I'm trying to remember. It undoubtedly after Ship of Tears. Because
yes.
They've, you know, at that point know that telepaths are weapons.
Anyway.
But yes,
that was
a startling effect. I remember how, you know, she turns around, the eyes are jet black. Hey, Jeffrey, here's the production question for you. Those kinds of contact lenses that fit over the entire eye like that, I mean, how uncomfortable is that?
Oh, those are brutally. I have been blessed not to have to do that, but that I don't know anybody that loves doing that at all. There's an excerpt in the behind the scenes. What was that thing called? The TNT video.
That special they did, yeah.
Yeah, there was a special behind the scenes special that TNT did, and Pat talks about that specifically because they do cover the whole eye from side to side, mm-hmm. you know, from edge to edge, and it's a great big huge disc that's brutally uncomfortable, and I think there's kind of self-explanatory. I think it's best put as it sucks.
So Andreas had to wear the red ones all the time, then.
Now that's different, only in respect to and with all credit to Jonathan Gording, who was the lens contact lens guy that we had with us on the show, and so those were custom made. I believe that to be true, that they were custom made for his eyeballs, so they were comfortable, so that they, you know, that they could be worn all the time by him.
Okay.
And I can tell you that I never once saw Andreas flinch or complain or whine about those things ever. He would pop them in first thing in the morning, and he would stay in them for 12, 14 hours straight. Never,
wow.
never had a problem. So, yeah, Jonathan obviously knew what he was doing, and those were good quality lenses. The more, if you will, gag lenses, like you know, big black ones or big white ones or whatever, were probably not as refined and not specially made for individual person's eyeballs. I don't know that for a fact either. Maybe, you know, because we had Jonathan with us for, all that time. So maybe, especially for all the aliens, maybe they really did have the chance to do precision contacts. Nonetheless, it's a whole lot of disc going into a little eyeball.
All righty. Next one.
Babcom link to Earth Force Destroyer Netherlands established. Incoming message from Captain Yarstow.
Captain's log. Yes, Netherlands. 68 days after secession. We're deep in hyperspace now, where the beacon is a faint signal that only the best of my communication stacks can enhance sufficiently for us to continue navigating. In a way, it's relaxing to be away from the universe a while, after all we've been through. But we have to get back to Orion 7. There's an Omega-class hole in the defense team right now. Unfortunately, even this far from the beacon, pursuit is still not far behind. So far, our pursuers are staying closer to the beacon, but just inside of us. We may have to take the ultimate risk, jumping to another beacon without holding this one to shake them. And now we have to wonder if that is enough. Lieutenant Harrington is a latent telepath, just weak enough that the Psi-Corps left him alone. In hyperspace, however, he is somewhat sensitive, and he assures me that there are telepaths tracking us. A statement I am unfortunately not prepared to dismiss.
Okay.
And so the saga of the EAS Netherlands continues.
Where is this story going?
I don't know, but we're going to have to give Yarstow his own show pretty soon.
I don't know. We've kept him pretty busy with other things. You think he'll have enough time?
That's what I'm wondering.
We shall see on the next installment of Adventures of the EAS Netherlands. We have another Kosh-related voicemail.
Ordinary presidential candidates can only guess at the future, but Kosh is no ordinary presidential candidate. Let us hear his wisdom.
If you do not vote, you will die.
Well, there you have it, folks. The joys of a prescient president, brought to you by the First Ones Electoral Fund and the Voting Pebbles Action Committee.
Wow. Dictator in the making, I'd say, huh?
Oh, that's funny.
Wow, that was great. I was Jeffrey, so, for a moment there, he really had my attention, because I thought when I, you know, I could sense that the little sound bite was coming up, and I thought it was going to be some stupid thing I had said on this radio show. So, so I was so relieved to hear the real Kosh talking. I was like, whew, okay, good.
We have a, we have an operative update. Is that what that is?
Yes, we do.
Gold Channel Online. Message received from Operative Number 6, Ministry of Information.
Mission update, Operation Dutch Courage, Syria Plenum Command Post reporting. 3 days after the attack on our comm facility, we are preparing to tighten the noose on the deviant cowards who launched the attack. While the tracking and monitoring equipment above ground suffered extensive damage, the control room was fortified enough to prevent any personnel losses. Earth Force scanners picked up the ship immediately after the attack and identified it as EAS Netherlands, last known to be at Orion 7. EAS ships took up the initial pursuit, shadowed by our own Black Omegas. Some skillful maneuvers far off the beacon soon forced the EAS forces to abandon the chase. However, the Black Omegas remain, thanks to the first test of our linked telepathic array. When Ms. Winter's control was debriefed, we learned of her successful deception of Agent Bester while linked to the rogue telepaths. That intel has allowed us to fashion a long-range hyperspace scanner, hacking into the beacons with a linked group of P-12 Teeps and Teeks. Agent Bester, having quickly recovered from his initial shock, is leading the group with a firm hand. At first, we only had enough P-12s on site for a vague fix, just enough to keep the Black Omegas in the right sector. As more P-12s have been rushed to the base, we have refined our focus, and now have their position firmly locked in. We are preparing to spring the trap before they can warn others of our new abilities. There was some debate about waiting to identify any Confederates. However, Agent Bester convinced the command staff this was most likely a solo operation. Now we will just make sure it was a suicide run. The Korra's mother, the Korra's father. Syria Plenum out.
Okay, I take that back. We have to get Yarsto and Edmund their own show.
Yeah, we do.
Well, I'm waiting to find out what happens. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
They are taking some very interesting implications that were established in the show and building on them, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, so far
I'm really enjoying it.
So far, this is the best B5 fan fiction I've ever experienced.
Yeah,
Yeah, it is. Go for it. Next one.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
The following recording has been taken from the Centauri Archive of the non-occupation of 2259. We apologize in advance for whatever you might hear.
This is Tajan of the non-regime. I am here on the non-homeworld mere hours after the bombardment has ended. The mass drivers of the Centauri are silent, but the screams of their victims continue on in the night. So far, communications have been blocked. I have no idea if this will get out or if the Centauri will intercept these messages. I can only hope that someone on the outside can hear what they are doing to us. So far, they have restricted all access to the comnets. Apparently, they are willing to make a statement soon, but I do... they have just opened one communication line. They are projecting some kind of hologram. What is that? Oh, great maker, what have they done? No, not even they would.
Don't wanna close my eyes. I don't wanna fall asleep, cause I miss you, baby. And I don't wanna miss a thing.
I got nothing.
If there is anything that you need to pound a planetary population into submission, it is to make them watch Armageddon.
And here I
Sorry,
thought he
you
was...
You can have your liquid sky, you can have your battlefield Earth. Armageddon, hands down, is the worst piece of film ever made.
No, I don't know.
I do. I cannot put Armageddon as being worse than Liquid Sky. That's just not possible.
I'll fight you on that one. Summer, you know what? I will happily say uncle if you just look at me, but on this one, it would be to the death.
Look who's talking through.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, yeah. Now he's got Val in his corner. He's getting all ballsy. Getting
come on, I want
an outline of your points as to why Liquid Sky is better than Armageddon.
Okay.
And because I literally, you fried my brain. I got nothing right now. I'm gone. I had a short circuit here. Play the next one.
Okay.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
We are all Kosh.
All your voter belong to us.
All your voter belong to us?
All your voter belong to us. Wow.
Okay. All right. The B5 meta show. We're gonna have one pretty soon. We're gonna have a show inside of a show. You watch.
Oh, man.
Babcom Link to Earth Force Destroyer Netherlands established. Incoming message from Captain Yarstow.
This is Yarstow from the Netherlands responding to show 70. So all your casts are belong to us, eh? Now what could we do with those? While I'm thinking about that, some other things. First of all, my signed copy of My Life with Geeks and Freaks arrived last week.
Cool.
Very cool. Secondly, you evil people have now got me pondering the possibilities of doing a B5 audio drama podcast.
Oh no.
Current opinion, doable, possibly fun, but needs a good team first. So, Mike, do you feel like running the board for it? I didn't think you would.
What he doesn't realize is that we already have a B5 audio drama running here.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's serialized. We're already serializing it.
I know.
All it needs to be
is just pulled out and put into its own... Oh, God, I'm making work for myself.
Stop it. Stop. It doesn't have to be done now. We can do this in the future.
We let them put together 12, 13 chapters, and then we can spin it off in its own thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, last one.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
Hey, Summer Jim and Jeffrey, it's Kurt and St. George.
Hi, Kurt.
About comes the Inquisitor. When I first saw this episode, at first I thought, this is pretty strange, you know, Delenn being tortured by the Vorlons. What's this all about, or the Vorlons agent, I should say? And, but, you know, the quality of the performances and the way that the ending was pulled off when they finally revealed Sebastian's actual identity, I mean, that could have been really cheesy, but they did a real good job. In that. But watching this episode repeated times, I have a problem with it. You know, if Delenn has a blind spot, it's not about her destiny. It's that she thinks the Vorlons are essentially good guys at this point in time, that they're on the side of light. She doesn't see how nasty they can really be. And, you know, and the same thing for Sheridan in a way. You'd think that after this experience, after he finds out who Sebastian really is, he'd start to go, who are my allies, you know? But it just gets brushed off. He feels quite smug, you know, or satisfied in unraveling the mystery, but you think it would give him pause. And it comes as quite a surprise later on when the Vorlons turn nasty. And after this episode, it really shouldn't. That's my take on it anyway. What do you guys have to say?
Well, I think nasty is a harsh word. I don't think nasty was completely accurate.
Well, see, first of all, I would say that, Kurt, this is not a problem with the episode. I think it's one of the many instances where JMS has subtext running through the writing in the show. Because there are other instances, and I think of Dust to Dust. You remember the vision that Jakar has while he's on Dust? And when it fades, the camera pulls away from the sobbing Jakar over Londo's battered figure, and then there's Kosh standing behind him. And when Kosh walks away, the sign on the wall says "Danger."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's pretty obvious at that point. So I think his points are good. I think Kurt is on the right track. But rather than it being a problem, I think that's just it's one of the strengths of the writing.
Hmm.
And Sheridan does, I mean, he does start questioning him, as we talked about geeking on A Fall of Night when he's talking with Delenn. And she says, you know, that the Vorlons have guided the races, have, you know, given us direction, and what is Sheridan's comment?
Manipulated us.
So we have the proper reaction when the time is right. Yeah, I don't think he's surprised, but remember, too, at this point, he is so driven to gain revenge for the loss of Anna.
Yeah.
That he's willing, in a sense, willing to make his own deal with the devil.
Hmm.
And you think about interludes and examinations, you know, we see that, you know, he provokes Kosh, basically, trying to get him, you know, you guys need to start letting me fight the war the way I need to fight it, and that means you need to take it in active hand, and Kosh lashes out at him, and what does Sheridan say? He says, so we know we see the true colors. So, I would disagree. I don't think it's so much a surprise as that, so much other stuff is going on. I don't know that he has the time to really sit and dwell on, you know, what is the nature of my allies.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It doesn't behoove him to question that at the beginning. But later on, when he needs to look at the bigger picture and find a solution, that's when he starts really considering who are these people that are aligning themselves with us, and what am I really getting from them? And we see it.
Yeah.
All right. Good thoughts, everybody. Thank you.
And very good. Are there more?
No, there are no.
No, there's no more.
Mike is sweating. So, if you want
to, I could talk for another 15
stop,
minutes.
Stop. Enough.
If you want to send Tim another email.
Yeah.
That email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. Or if you want to give us a call and leave us your own voicemail, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
You hear that, Valerie? Sent the greatest email ever.
Oh, my God. I'm joining Tim's fan club now.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.